And it's 14 and a half minutes past six here on SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader. Bulls, bears, stocks, trends, takeovers, dividends, stock exchanges. What is all of it? What does it mean? Anything you may not understand about the markets and their inner workings, do give us a call on 011-731-8502. Or you can tweet me at Sikim Gabadeli. We're talking to Simon Brown, founder of Just One Lap. And this never gets old, because there's always new things that we go, and you think you understood something, and then something happens and you sit and you go, but hold on.
But Siki, it never gets old. I've been in the stock market since I was a kid, and I still learn stuff. I mean, there's just the amount to learn. I suppose your learning slows down at some point, and that might be age, it might be knowledge. But there's always stuff to learn.
Right, so let's look at some terms. We're going to talk about takeovers, and we always get excited about takeovers. So the listed companies, if they're listed, for example, will put out a notice, a cautionary, we call it, on SENS, and say they are in talks with so-and-so. We recently saw that with PPC and AfriSam back starting to talk to each other again. So let's explain takeovers.
So takeover is literally, and takeover or merger, the line is often difficult to separate them. But in essence, the next look at the case of PPC and AfriSam, they're looking more for a merger than a takeover. Okay. But in essence, it's two companies that are currently independent that will join up and be one. If we go to Woolworths and David Jones a couple of years ago, that was a takeover where Woolworths literally bought out David Jones. David Jones shareholders no longer had shares. They were given cash instead. Okay. Whereas the AfriSam might be a bit more of a merger, where AfriSam shareholders, it's unlisted, so it's a private entity, it's PIC and the like, will then get some PPC shares. What's important is that as an existing shareholder, you have rights. You have a right to vote on this takeover and say whether you do or don't like it. You know, as with all voting, if you don't vote with a majority, your view might be overridden. But then you need to be compensated for it.
Okay.
You can't just have your shares taken. You've got to be paid in cash. You've got to be paid in shares. You might not like the proposed terms, but there's also rules around, you know, fair valuations and the like.
And I was going to go into that, because it takes forever. Look at the SAB AP InBev, for example. So for someone who's a layman and is watching that, why does the process sometimes take so long?
So it's and an SAB AB InBev is a great example, and that's the size of it. It's because those two companies operated in so many jurisdictions, and in many cases you've got to. So AfriSam and PPC, we will need Competition Commission approval in South Africa. That's one organization. They give approval. If the shareholders can come to terms, we've got a deal. SAB InBev, they needed approval in Europe, they needed it in North America, they needed it in China, they needed it locally here, some South American countries at the same time. So there was a lot more regulatory process.
Okay.
The two stocks trade on a number of exchanges. SAB was on Johannesburg and London. AB InBev came to list in Johannesburg. So it depends on that level of complexity as to the duration. If we go back to the Woolies, David Jones one, that one was a fairly quickish process. There was no competition issues. It needed to be voted on by shareholders of the two respective companies. And then it went ahead.
We're talking about valuation. I mean, how much information as an ordinary shareholder do you get to assess whether you like a particular deal or not?
So that often is the tough part. So the one piece of information you'll get is there's a price being offered to you for your shares. Typically, that price is a premium. So if the share's been trading at 20 Rand, whoever's taking over will offer you maybe 25 Rand, maybe even as much as 30, although that's a fairly chunky premium, but they will offer a premium. They may offer you shares in the new institution as well in lieu of cash. In terms of the synergies and why it's a good deal and stuff, management will present it to you.
Okay.
But it's fairly dense reading, and in many cases,
I know.
in truth, there are two things. In truth, you have to trust management, and I hate that. But there's a bigger truth here, that mergers and acquisitions are never as good, as efficient, or as quick as promised. They always take longer to the synergies. And let's go back to Massmart and Walmart, which is now 7 years old, 6 years old. And we really haven't
seen it. We still haven't seen the benefits.
We absolutely haven't seen it. Some work better. Adcock Ingram's another, the takeover by Bidvest. We haven't really seen it yet. So oftentimes management's overly optimistic. And fault them. I mean, they need to be. They believe their own story to a degree, yeah. And they need to sell it. But the synergies and the excitement and the extra benefits, etc., never flow quite as quickly.
We're in conversation with Simon Brown, who's founder of Just One Life. We're talking market terms, looking at some of those terms that we talk about. You hear us on the radio, you see it on television, and we talk about these things and often don't have the chance to explain them in the way that we are doing now. So if you do have any questions, you can give us a call or send us a tweet. A tweet. And I'm going onto Twitter now to check if we've got any comments on there. But you can also call us on 011-731-8502. So one thing shareholders love, investors love, are dividends.
So absolutely. So I mean, we buy shares because we want the price to go up. But actually, there are two ways we make a profit from a share. And the second way is dividends as well. And we far too often neglect the dividends when we're looking at the performance of a share over a period of time.
Yeah.
So let's step back. What's a dividend? Well, I mean, the core rationale for a business is to make a profit.
Yes.
Having made a profit, there's a board of directors who've been elected by shareholders at the annual general meeting. And that board of directors decides what to do with the profit.
Okay.
Some of it they will use within the business to upgrade equipment and maybe move into new geographies. They might use it to maybe buy out some smaller competitors, to try new product lines and the like. But some of it they give back to the owners of the business. And that's me, you and the listeners. That's the shareholders.
Yeah.
And they give it back to those shareholders as a form of a dividend.
Okay.
They will potentially do this twice a year when they issue results. Some companies will only do it once a year at year end. And some companies, particularly the smaller sort of faster growing companies, don't pay a dividend. They're making a profit, but they put it all back into it.
And that's what I wanted to come to as well, is you hear of, oh, that company is a dividend payer, or that one is a growth company, and so on. So just explain that as well.
So you will find, I mean, a dividend payer is a stock with a fairly almost predictable level of income. And you look at your food retailers, your ShopRites and your Pick and Pays, we're always going to be eating. Yes, they will have good years and less good years, but they're always going to be doing fairly well. They're typically going to be growing sales. As Wayne was saying a moment ago, Woolies had a tough year.
Yeah.
They still managed to grow their food sales and the like. And so they become what you would call a stable dividend payer.
Okay.
You will then get your high dividend payers, companies such as Metrofile, who generates large amounts of cash, but doesn't really got much to do with it. So they give it back to shareholders, and shareholders then get a fairly chunky dividend relative to that share price that they've paid for it.
Right.
Then you get the Kumbas, who have been great dividend payers, and as Wayne said, were absolutely slaughtered when iron ore went to $40 a ton, cut the dividend, and then results earlier this week, and there was a lot of expectation / hope that the dividend would come back. Well, the board of directors have said, and as is their remit, and I don't disagree with them, they've said, hang on, let's first keep some of this cash internal. Let's strengthen our cash situation.
Yes.
So they're sitting on a pile of cash, but in a cyclical business rather than a stable, like a good dividend payer, like a ShopRite or a Pick and Pay.
Yeah.
In a cyclical business, you have bust and boom, and you've just come out of a bust situation. You want to keep some cash.
You want to be a little bit more conservative.
Yes.
Let's take a call from Owen in Greenstone. Hi, Owen.
Good evening.
Hi, Owen.
Just a very foolish question.
No such thing.
What factors influence the value of a currency? The factors broadly.
Okay. That influence the value of a currency. All right. Thank you. Thanks, Owen. And often people refer to a currency as like the share price of a country. Right.
It is. I mean, and it's actually a great question. And we could delve into it and spend hours, days, the rest of our life talking about it. To me, what influences a currency, as you say, it's like a vote or a share price on an economy. But again, it's going to be supply and demand. So what we have been seeing recently is our rand moving stronger against the dollar. We were 18, then 16, then 14. Now we're at 13 and perhaps on track for 12 or 11. Who knows? What that means is people have been buying rands, which means that money has been coming into South Africa. When the currency has been weakening, it means that people would have been selling rands and buying dollars, and therefore money has been exiting the country. So at the high level, it basically says to you, which direction is that flow of cash? And of course, this flow of cash is not driven by me, you, and Owen taking a quick holiday overseas because it's too small.
Yeah.
It's traders. If you want to buy a South African bond, you look at our bonds. Maybe you want to buy ShopRite shares or something, and you look at them and you say, like that, but you sit in New York in dollars. First, you've got to buy the rand and bring the money into South Africa in that sense. Okay. And then, of course, it is your importers and exporters. So really, that currency comes to, are people moving money into your economy, in which case the currency is strengthening, or are they moving it out of the economy, in which case it's going to be weakening?
But sometimes we also then give reasons, whether they are political reasons, sure, or economic reasons, or what's happening. Why would something that's happening in the US, for example, affect what's happening with our currency and that kind of thing? Let's chat a bit about that.
And it goes to, and if we go back to December 2015, when President Zuma fired then Finance Minister Nene, and money went out. And the reason the money went out was political reasons. People who had invested money into South Africa suddenly thought, whoa, hang on a second here, not so sure, things have changed very rapidly, not sure we like the new situation, we're taking our money out. The ditto can happen with a tweet from Donald Trump, something like that, which can then cause perception, and perception is not always reality, but it's enough
to cause people to sell dollars and
suddenly say we don't want to be there anymore. You know, we've seen a lot of rand strength has been what we call the chase for yield. Yes. So our government bonds pay about 8% a year. American government bonds pay about 1% a year. Now, sure, ours are riskier than Americans, but in truth, our government's not going to default either. So suddenly people are like, hey, look at that. We can go to South Africa and get 8% on a government
instead
bond.
Instead of 1%.
Instead of 1%. But before they can buy the bond, they've got to buy the rand, and that strengthens it. Then something political happens and they're like, oh, hang on, that 8% might not be so certain, and off they go rushing out. So it is a blend. I always say to folks who are interested in FX, for stock markets, you look at the business pages.
Yeah.
For FX, often you're looking at the front page.
Read
the
front page, yeah, and that will kind of tell you what is happening. And trading currencies, that's, those guys don't sleep, right?
The currency market opens 5 a.m. Monday morning in Sydney, closes 5 p.m. Friday afternoon in New York, and it just runs. And it is a giant market. The South African, the rand against the dollar, the trade of that every day is probably 10 or 20 times more than what the JSE does. The currency market globally is humongous and unregulated, which really, so it's regulated in terms of our Reserve Bank and the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England and all of that.
So all those central banks.
But not regulated in the sense of a Financial Services Board or a JSE regulations and the like. A much less regulated market and not a central place. If you want to buy a ShopRite share, you've got to go via the JSE. That's it. If you want to buy BHP, you could buy it in Sydney, Joburg, New York or London. But those are your four options.
Yeah.
If you want to trade currencies and you're a currency dealer,
two
dealers can just do it directly with themselves. They don't need to go through
a
recognized exchange necessarily.
And hence, then, as you say, that lack of regulation. Let's talk about the rand itself. It's often referred to as a highly liquid currency. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
So liquidity is just the value of transaction being done on any one given day. So if we took an illiquid currency, and let's go to the Zimbabwean dollar, which is very difficult to transact because no one wants the Zimbabwean dollar. And in fact, they've got their new notes and they've used US
the
dollars
notes,
and etc. So there's not much transaction happening there. So in the Zim dollar, maybe there's, and I'm just going to make up some numbers, $1 million of trade a day, whereas in the South African market there's 100 million, for example. And that means the liquidity just says there's a lot more transaction happening. why we like liquidity, and it's applicable if you're buying a share, or whatever it might be. The benefit of liquidity is it gives you better price discovery because it means there are more people buying and selling, so you get a true reflection. If me and you sit here and agree to transact, there's no price discovery. It's just me and you arguing over a price.
Yeah. If we bought, if we add more people.
Yes. If we bought all the listeners in at the same time, suddenly there's hundreds of thousands of people. We're going to get to a truer, fair reflection for that moment in time.
Yeah.
And it also means, because of better liquidity, is it's easier for me to get in and out of a position. And those people sitting in New York who want to buy our bonds, one thing they want to know is that when they want to take the money home, click, click, it's home. They don't want 500 layers of red tape and difficulty in transacting. They want ease of transaction. They want that the money to be able to move in literally clicks of a mouse.
Yeah.
And that high liquidity in the rand, we're a second tier currency, but we're probably sort of 10 to 15 in terms of that liquidity level.
About, last time I checked, we were about the 16th most liquid.
We absolutely are a very, very liquid currency, which has benefits and less benefits. You know, one of the benefits is discovery of the price. One of the drawbacks is that it means that something happens on the other side of the world and our rand moves.
We are hit.
So often it's not our fault when suddenly the rand moves.
We'll leave it there. Thanks, Simon. Simon Brown is founder of Just One Lab. Have a good weekend. Back on Monday. Bye-bye.